The following content has been provided by New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. For more information, visit us online at www.nsa.edu.
Hear the world calling, but some don't listen. They're only trying to drag you back into prison, that's right.
It's what have you time. I'm Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
And we're back.
We are back, but this time we're in my son's car, which occasionally makes strange engine rumbles even when it's off.
It was actually, it was not moderate rumbles. It was like going on the washboards of.
So we're parked here. We're
parked.
But if strange sounds occur in the background.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted if anything happens.
That. It might be that.
Yes. So what have you been doing, Becca?
Oh, man.
You're back in town?
I'm back in town. I was in Pittsburgh last week for the ACCS conference. Oh, I talked about that because I was trying to pull off a party sight unseen in another city, and it turned out to be even funnier than I thought it would be because we were renting a house with some other people from NSA that were with us, and I had to do all the cooking in the house kitchen that was remarkably ill-equipped. So it didn't
It
undershot it. It
was I always think that's a weird thing when you get into an under-equipped kitchen. The things that they did have.
Well, that was it.
Like, I'm always like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If there's no knives, why do you have this large-scale plastic ladle?
Well,
why? What will we be ladling?
Well, and in the fridge, there were sort of some remnants of sour cream that somebody had left, but there was no salt and pepper to be found.
There's usually only the mustard that's stuck on the sides of the bottle. Like, no mustard within, but just the illusion of mustard.
Well, there was... Okay,
oh, and that wonderful poem about the maraschino cherries. The one jar. Yeah, you know, we were laughing about that.
Oh, I know. It's a fantastic poem.
But it's that.
Why are you bringing it up?
Because that's the lingering thing in an ill-equipped kitchen. We would have a jar of maraschino cherries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and this didn't have a cutting board. It didn't have a knife except for a bread knife. So
serrate your way through everything.
Serrate my way. I found myself, I was making a tapenade and I was faced with a large...
It's so annoying when it's like serrated knife for garlic.
Well, this was a ton of olives and it's like, I can't get anywhere with this knife. There was a pizza wheel.
That wouldn't be bad for olives.
Actually, I made good use of the pizza
wheel. But that
wheel
would be a pain without a cutting board.
Well, I had a suspicion. Like, when I was shopping, I was grabbing a bunch of things, and I had this feeling that there might not be a cutting board. I hadn't checked. So I bought a dollar plastic placemat. You know, like a hard, bendy plastic placemat. And it was, like, the best purchase that I made, because I was making a ton of, like, a dark chocolate bark that
you could bend it.
Yeah. Nice. So, like, I could slide a big thing of the chocolate bark out to the other room and put it on the table and then
do it
again.
Wise investment.
It was a, you know what was my other wise investment? Was a roll of masking tape. Because
I read something about this recently. Yes.
What?
But I don't know why you were using masking tape. Why did you use
Basically for everything. Like, I started feeling like, actually, I should never travel without masking tape from here on out. Because
I'm intrigued.
I know.
Tell me more.
Well, I was trying to do a flower arrangement, which, if anyone listening was there, you just have to be a little bit lenient when you think about that flower arrangement. Because I had, I had to buy all the serving pieces, you know, because I couldn't pack them in my bag. So I ended up with kind of a big galvanized tub. It was more of a tub than a bucket. And that was kind of what I had to put flowers in, and that's not an easy thing to put flowers in. So I grabbed like three big bouquets of white hydrangeas, but of course they would all splay out in the
masking
tub. So I grabbed the masking tape and I did a grid across the top to hold the hydrangeas in there. I needed greenery. The greenery wilted that I cut out of the backyard, whatever. So by the end, it was okay. If you didn't look closely at it, at least it was just there it was. But the masking tape helped that. Then we were trying to transport all the food from this house to the hotel suite where we were going to do it. And, of course, I didn't have things to transport. So I had an old bakery box that I layered all of the chocolate bark, which I should just say had like candied ginger and cashews and dried apricots and cherries and golden raisins. Good. It was good. It was an Ina Garten recipe. Anyway, I layered that all up.
Consistently golden.
And then it was bulging out the top, so I like masking taped the lid all the way around so that it would transport nicely.
I see all the time when catering on the fly that masking tape is the need.
Well, and then I had brought a paint drop cloth to throw over the table. Because I had, you know, anyway, mm-hmm. So I had that and I pulled it out. It was right before I had to go give my talk. So I'm trying to unload the food and I threw the drop cloth, took it out of the package, threw it over the table. And then when I look down, I am completely covered in fluff. Like,
but you had masking tape to make a quick backwards tape mitten for yourself and put it off. Perfect.
So I was like, wow, that.
So
that
I recently tape. Went in the rabbit hole of tape because.
That is a rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never know what might catch my attention or distract me. No. Food 52, which I enjoy.
Oh, Food you 52, told me about this, I think. Yeah.
They had this thing about, they like Instagrammed or something, some picture of their like samples of. I want to say it was banana bread made with like different, they were like testing different flours or something. I don't know what it was. Sure. It was one of those things though, like a comparison mm-hmm. of something. I think it was banana bread, but I might be lying. Anyways, they had these little sticks in the back with a little scrap of painter's tape, torn blue painter's tape that they had marked them what they were, you know, like sure. What group they were, yeah. whatever. Mm-hmm. And apparently got a monumental amount of blowback from chefs about their tape. And that all these chefs were like, you think you're a food magazine and you do that? Like, and people were like, come on now. So it was just this intriguing, like, wait, there's like something I don't know about here. They did a special article about chefs and their strong opinions about painter's tape. And I was like, see, I need to know this. I'm curious now.
Yeah.
But apparently this is like the first thing that you would get in deep troubles at cooking school or in many kitchens. All the chefs that they interviewed have like different tapes that they use. And they're like people who are half inch light green, someone who special orders their 3/4 inch orange painter's tape. They have like standards on the painter's tape. And the biggest one was people saying, chefs saying that they would fire people for tearing tape. That if it's not cut neatly. I thought this was so funny. Apparently it's because it shows that it's like broken window theory. It shows that you're cutting like corners everywhere.
Checking the bathroom to see if it's clean in a restaurant.
Tells you about what you need to know. And that was the thing is that apparently, you know, when you're prepping food, you would label it, and different chefs would have different ideals of how this is done. But your name has to be on it. The date that you prepped it, so they know who to blame.
For the, like, soggy cilantro.
Your name, or who made weird big triangles of onions. Like, catch that person in the act. Catch that person. Anyways, they would cut a perfect whatever their ideal amount of tape is. You cut and you fold one corner down so it's an easy pull off corner.
Okay.
And they would stick it on the food prep bins and they're like an inch from the top and it has to not be going sideways or all this stuff. It's very, very intense. But
persnickety.
Right, but their point was that when you're in the middle of like a slammed service or things are really stressful, like one of the stressful things should not be locating the bin of some like it needs to look like I can find what I need and I can whatever. It was
That's
interesting.
Really funny.
And so I do write on my bins. Well, speaking of my bins.
I know, I was going to say we should just mention just speaking, that Rachel is sitting here in my son's car
treasuring my sourdough on my lap.
On her lap, she has a bucket of dough.
Well, she in 5 has- minutes, I'm looking at my timer. I need to turn it. And I couldn't leave it inside when it was only this far away.
Oh, my word.
I'm like, it's only, like, to my front door. I don't want to throw off my bread sequence today just because I'm in the car.
Right, but it's sitting on your lap. Yeah. So
I would write on the lid with a Sharpie when I make a lot of bread, when I have a lot of things going on at one time. I will write on the lid with a Sharpie the times that I'm supposed to turn it, like, and when it is going in the oven or whatever.
What? Doesn't that kind of get tedious when you have a lid that's been labeled?
No, I just wipe it off with alcohol.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Later. Huh. I am not one of these professional chefs, but this is what caught my attention with the painter's tape, is because I already am a person who just writes straight on the bins. Because if you have multiple things going, it can get very, very like, you're like, wait, which is this? Which did I do last time?
Here's my problem. This is where I struggle.
Yeah.
I like the idea of having a really, like, well-stocked freezer that's clearly labeled. You know what everything is.
So you just haven't found your ideal painter's tape
yet. I haven't. Maybe that's my problem. Because the thing is, I'll do something. I'll get it in the freezer. And then I won't label it
and
at all.
And then you believe it's garbage food now that it's been in the freezer?
Well, but then you're like, what is this mystery thing that I have in the back? Or, worse yet, I'll do something like, this must be, like, 3 years ago. We were in down in McCall, and we picked huckleberries because we just happened to, like, the huckleberries happened to be ripe, and we were in the woods, and there they were. So we picked a bunch of huckleberries.
That's the best way to have that happen.
I know, because we didn't have to struggle around trying to find a patch. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we picked all the huckleberries, brought it home, and, you know, that stuff is, like, gold. Like, people are so defensive of their huckleberry patches. So,
I recently read that there was even someone shot over in Montana.
Oh, my word.
In Montana, like, 10 years ago or something.
The
I don't know.
Huckleberry
Somebody
feud.
Was shot over, believed encroaching upon huckleberry territory.
Yeah, so anyway, we just happened to find him. So I came back, and it wasn't a ton of it, but it was, like, it was enough that I thought, we got to do something fun with this.
Yeah.
So I made huckleberry jam. And I put it in little jars, you know, because I didn't have a lot of it.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, I'll just put it, because I did freezer jam. So I was like, I'll put it in the freezer and then you can just pull out a little bit at a time.
Right.
I believe it's still in there.
No! No! Get that stuff out.
I do.
Get it out. Bring it.
Bring it
to me and I'll eat
it. I have a freezer out in the garage. And it's kind of a journey to have to go
out
there.
Well, just go out there and get the stuff. One of my favorite, you're reminding me of a really good recipe for that blackberry caramel sauce that I sometimes make in the blackberry season.
I've got a ton of blackberries this year, so.
It's so good.
I'll have to hit you up
for that. The
caramel
sauce. It's, like, really good. It was, it was a component of a Bobby Flay recipe that was, if I do say so myself, wildly overblown with
was
nuance.
This the, like, turducken one?
It was like turducken. Well, no, only if you
I tried
exchange
this.
The turkey
it
for
it involved like
for,
pistachios and
no.
sausage and layering things and frying it and rounded it up and bacon and stuff like this.
No, you're thinking of that Gordon Ramsay one, and that one is good. But no, this was not the turducken.
It is Gordon Ramsay.
I was saying it was a turducken if you say that mascarpone is the duck and pumpkin pancakes is the turkey. Okay,
I'm surprised that you went there.
No, I'm saying the recipe I'm talking about was one that was like mascarpone and something stuffed pumpkin pancakes with a blackberry caramel sauce. I'm saying it's gone too far. It was.
And you made this?
No, I just made the blackberry caramel sauce, and it's fabulous, but I don't know why you would put it on a pumpkin pancake with mascarpone in it. I just feel like at that point, do you even need to eat? Like, once you've made that, you've kind of killed the mood. It sounds so intense to me.
Wow,
my word. Like, is there anything else we could have here? Like some maple whipped cream, and then we need some shaved white chocolate or something.
And maybe a maraschino cherry.
Yeah, because you have that at least. Anyways, my point is, it was but that is such a good caramel sauce recipe, and I've made it with raspberry too, and it's so good. We did that when we would do the spiced donuts and a raspberry sauce and vanilla ice cream, and it makes like a really yummy situation.
Right. It's really good.
Yes. No, the Gordon Ramsay one is
I just like that you're sneering at a pumpkin pancake and then bringing up your cardamom spiced donuts.
I think it's the fact that just sounds, it's, I like the idea of a pumpkin pancake. And I like the idea of mascarpone, and I like the idea of blackberry caramel sauce.
Oh, everyone, she's turning her bread now.
My phone was on silent. I wasn't expecting it to actually
You can't ever trust that when you have an alarm.
You never
can. So anyway, we should not talk about this anymore.
Why not?
What's something
so
more serious?
I'm opening the bread. Ignore me. This is going to be beautiful sourdough.
If only I had brought something myself that I could sit here and feel domestic in the car.
I just didn't want to abandon it in its time frame.
I've been
as you
working
recall,
on the garden, though. I
as
can't
you
bring
recall,
the garden
Becca, you said you were coming at 10, and it's like lunchtime. So
well,
initially, how could I have timed my bread around this? I couldn't. I had to do it in the middle of. This makes a beautiful dough, doesn't it?
It does.
Are you admiring it?
Everyone is beautiful. She's got her hands in the dough.
It's just looking great, guys. It's looking good. I should save that for the tip department of the show.
Oh, save your tip. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what were we going to talk about? We were going to talk about the soft feminism of the conservative world.
It's actually a little bit, I just feel like as an intro because you called it soft, not for any other reason, but just reminds me of the thing Grandpa might, maybe he's quoting other people through all of the era. I don't know who he's quoting, but Grandpa always has said, and then Dad has always said, and now we always say that hard teaching makes soft hearts and soft teaching makes hard hearts. And how often is that the case that you see people who are like always under this head petting sort of teaching that are like the most hard to actual rebuke, actual spiritual counsel, actual anything. Hard-hearted people are under soft, soft teaching. And a lot of the time, very hard teaching has a bunch of people just thriving along.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So because you said, what did you say? Soft feminism, I was saying, which is often correlated with hard hearts. So, like,
it's true.
Hardcore feminism, we all know that that's associated with hard hearts. But
you know, it's like most Christian women are not going to be wearing obscenity hats and marching on Washington. I mean, some
we like to
perhaps were way too tolerant of that stupid movement. Like, there are a lot of people being defensive in a
on behalf of the movement.
Way
well,
about
they're
that.
Coming up with reasons that nobody actually on board with it had,
and
reasons to be able to participate.
But most of the time, the extreme feminism is fairly easy to spot. But I feel like so many assumptions have just crept in to the nice evangelical world.
Right, like what I was telling you when we first said we should talk about this, is how many of us, when you are facing some... This is why stories are important, and what you're watching or whatever is important. But we're saying how many people would think, how, you know, I'm at this crossroads in my life, and I think I want to just pursue my own dreams now, even though, you know, whatever. Say my husband has a job in another city, but I don't want to leave because of whatever. And so it's time to choose me. Like, I'm going to choose me, or I'm going to do this. I deserve it. I have done my fair share for him, and now it's his time to sacrifice something for me.
I've sacrificed for him. Yeah.
And the thing about this is how often at those moments do you think in terms of what would the cute, fun woman that I would like to be
In
a TV show? Like, let's run a quick test of what would Reese Witherspoon's character do that would look fine on her because it would be a story. And also because she'll still be cute and more fulfilled at the end because it's also make-believe.
She would have found her dream.
She would have found her dream, and her husband probably would have come around.
Yeah.
Or there would have been a cuter guy.
Yeah,
she might have been a better guy.
Burn her life down.
Right, and she didn't. And what happened is it all panned out for the best that Reese made this great decision. So I'm going to follow in her footsteps. You know, or I'm going to see what I can do to Meg Ryan this situation. But the thing is we hardly ever think I'd like to run this thought process by, you know, like we were talking Queen Esther or maybe Ruth. Maybe like I'd love to be able to get together with some of these great women of the faith to just ask them.
The kind of woman who would say, if I perish, I perish.
Yeah, the women who say,
where you go
I will go.
Your people will be my people.
Yes. And it's like, you can count on me to be faithful no matter what.
Right.
Is not really our slogan.
Now this just made me think of something else, which is slightly tangential to the feminism thing that we were just talking about, but the whole, like, it's time for me. I sacrifice for him. It's time for him to do this for me. And I was thinking, you know, it struck me the other day how a lot of women, I think, tend to run the relationship with their husband as if they are the clerk at a store and there's a counter between them.
I think it's like the ugliest, ugliest way to behave.
Well, yeah, it's kind
in
of like
any relationship.
Oh, you want this from me? Well, how much are you willing to pay?
Let's
check your accounts.
Creeped out when people talk about it. Like, because sometimes it comes all the way out in that kind of terminology. It's like, well, because I did this, he has to do
it's like
whatever.
I'm tallying like, the books.
This is not the right way to do it, guys.
And I think it is that is the soft feminism, actually, that we're talking about, which is submission. What's that? This is all about transactions.
Yes, exactly. Why would I submit to someone?
Why would I lay
who
myself
is currently
down?
In debt to me?
Why would I offer currently. Myself?
Yes, that would be just
that
lame. That would be like putting too deep of a discount on my product.
That'd be a bad bargain.
I think that the thing, but there's like multiple layers of confusion in this, because one that I think Christian women who get into that mentality are completely overlooking is the whole man and his wife become one flesh.
One flesh.
And
yeah.
that you're not, if you are doing great sacrificial things for your husband, it's not for you.
If you are
building your husband up by laying down your life,
and if
then
you're
it
charging
is also
him stiff prices.
Right,
you're paying him.
You're ripping yourself off.
Exactly.
Like what you're doing here when you do that is not.
Oh, guys, it's doing
that
it.
That is terrifying.
The thing is, the engine is not on. It's not been on for like half an hour.
It's like a spazzing out air pump.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
I know.
This is dangerous times. So, anyways. I start to think we're going to see like smoke coming out the hood and it's going to get like best episode ever. So anyways,
oh,
we have
word.
The thing about this is that it really is like you and your husband are one. Your sacrifices for him are not for him and not for you. Like
right. They're
not, it's not like, oh, I'll do this for him, but later he'll owe me for me. Like
right. Later
that'll be a thing.
Right.
Like later I'm going to demand something.
Right, and
I'll
when you
hold
see
this
a relationship like that, it's like watching a three-legged race where they are wildly out of sync.
I do think sometimes it works better than others for people, and I think that is when people are more naturally self-aware. Like, because I think sometimes it kind of pans out medium okay for people. Like, they have, like, they are maybe kinder people, so they are actually considering what the other person is doing for them, or like they're more aware. And it doesn't mean that it's godly, it just means it's less deadly. It's like this might.
Maybe it's less deadly in the short term.
Yeah, maybe we're just living in the middle lands of. No, it's just weird. It's sometimes people just do really weird things. It's what you're like, yeah. But it seems to be.
Because if you have two people who are each sacrificing for the other, then
who's not getting everything?
Right,
they're all
right. Getting
everything
now,
they could need.
But then the first, your first thought when you hear that though is, yes, but if I sacrifice, but he doesn't.
Yeah,
what
if he doesn't hold up his side of the bargain? And then
right. That's
the thing is that you say, yeah, but then you're still doing it unto the Lord, primarily,
yeah. Not
unto your spouse, which means that the Lord will never let that go unrewarded.
Exactly.
But it is not a vending machine of, look, Lord, I sacrificed,
and
fix the, you know,
right.
do this.
And not to mention, though, too, if you have a wife who is sacrificing, laying herself down for her husband, and he is not doing his part, the thing is, that is a far more effective way
to win him over.
Of
yeah. Winning
him over than to be retreating and like, okay,
you're
fine,
like,
what
fine
you didn't
then.
Give to me, so I won't give
fine
to you.
Fine then, I'm gonna just be
But
a...
I just think women really, I think often, set up a little shop counter between themselves and their husband. And then
I noticed this
conduct
the other day.
The transactions over the counter.
Right. Well, I have to, this is not with a husband, but I noticed this the other day with Moses, who is my, might be 20 months now, something. Anyways, he's our toddler, really our main source of entertainment. He just started running, like actually running. So this morning we were getting slow-mo video footage of him running, which is, like, the funniest thing
ever. I enjoy his elbows when
he runs. He's got so much movement going every different direction while he runs. It's so funny. So anyways, Moses, who is just a total peach, and he's just in such a sweet phase, and he bringing me his shoes because he wanted his shoes on for some reason. And I sit down on the stairs and to put his shoes on for him. And
oh, wow. It's back.
It really is like a dragon is awaking. We're inside of the dragon. Anyways, but he brings me his shoes and he wants me to put them on. And so I have to stop what I'm doing, sit down on the stairs, let him, like, but he does that awesome thing where they're like, becoming more self-aware where he like knows he has to back up onto my lap.
Yeah.
You know, like where he like turns around and begins reversing to come to come in for the getting his shoes on. And I pull him up on my lap and of course you're like kissing his cheek and he's being awesome and practicing saying shoe, which he couldn't say for a long time. He totally failed and called it buh for a long time. Anyways, you're saying shoe. We have this little moment and it just struck me like at that moment, me giving to him was very much him giving to me at the same time. Like, it was a very sweet little moment where you have a funny little person on your lap, and it was not sacrifice. It was not work to put his shoes on. It was just a sweet moment of fellowship. But if you wanted to be calculating things that you were doing, obviously this is a miniature example, but I'm talking like, if you wanted to be like, I had to stop what I was doing, put everything down to like sit down and waste my time putting someone's shoes on who's not even going outside. And
he's probably going to take them off.
And he's the worst about leaving him somewhere so we can't find him when we need to go somewhere. And it's just terrible. It's like, but he's also just a fabulously funny, like, you know, there's just, is that another weird noise happening?
I think that might be wildlife.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
It's like, I think it's a locust or something.
Attacked from above. And so anyways, my point is that a lot of the time when you start calculating, you're always in the mood to tabulate more that you've done. If you are calculating, you start counting things that weren't even, you know, like, maybe you thought, I'd like to make a chocolate pie today, but later on in the day, you're like, and I made that chocolate pie for you, and you didn't even care, and I didn't even, you know, like, maybe you just start rounding up all the time. Like, let me just round everything into this.
Well, and of course, you round the other person down.
They're all the time down.
And just you subtract all the time up. Things because you know their motives were bad.
He might have made the bed this morning, but that was only because he wanted me to feel bad that I hadn't done it yet.
And I know that he said that I was pretty, but he didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it. If he meant it, he would have done something that someone would do for Reese Witherspoon. My favorite. It is just really dumb. But the reality is, the thing about entertainment is I don't feel like we're really super uptight about this, but if you are not noticing how much you're being lied to, that it does just drift in and shape your perception of what does it mean to not be in love with someone anymore, to just need to cut losses and move on.
Right.
Right? Now it's time for us to consciously uncouple.
I just would like to say
Gwyneth Paltrow's
that
thing?
That was not the engine. That was just a truck driving past.
Yeah.
The whole being shaped by story, I just think people are far too naive, because how many hours does the average person spend absorbed in story of some kind or other? And it shapes what you think is funny. It shapes what you admire. It shapes
what you think is not a big deal.
What you disdain.
What you're like, that's not a big deal. Or, of course, the dad who protects his daughter is always the villain.
Right.
Naturally. Right. Naturally, that's the bad guy.
Right.
We hate him.
I just think it's a very powerful medium that can be used for good, and it could also be used for a lot of bad.
Something I was thinking about quite a while ago, just in light of, I guess, watching endless TV shows or reading books or whatever it is you're doing that's shaping you. But it was that I was laughing, like, when we are, you know, dead and gone, will our children and our grandchildren just be like, full of gratitude that we took the time to watch all of the Psych episodes. Do you know what I mean? Like, will that be a thing
I'm
that...
I'm sure it'll make it into the obituary.
I'm sure it'll be like, but we're so glad they got that done.
Luckily.
Like, at least they were able to make time to be entertained by something. And not that I have any grievance with being entertained by something. You know, there have been phases of our life that I think were more... Remember us watching all the Monk episodes when the twins were... Like, there was a lot of, like, comatose nursing time at night sure. of burping children and changing yeah. diapers and staggering yeah. around so tired. But it's not like I have a problem with there being seasons of that. But I think about things. Like, I had a great-great-grandmother. Nay, right? Wasn't she a great-great-grandmother? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And who I never met. Like, but we have some things that she did. We have, like, a quilt that she made. I have her ruby ring. It is, and I love that ring because it has a big indentation on it because it, from being worn next to a wedding ring for a long time, it yeah. has that. And I don't even think I've seen a picture of her. I don't think I know what she even looked like. Right. But we know that she was a Christian woman and that she had her front parlor room. She turned into just like a... She would have clothing and quilts and things for needy people. She turned her, like, she's a Christian right. woman who did good for people. And we have a quilt that she made, which is beautiful. But anyways, and our daughter Lena's middle name is after her, May. And the thing that's funny is I don't even know her. I don't know what she looked like. I don't know who her parents were. I don't know the details of that woman.
Right.
And the good deeds that she did still matter to me.
Right.
It still is like, that was awesome of her.
Yeah.
Like, that still meant something that she yeah. did these things. And it's like, so when we're dead and gone, what will we have done that will matter right. to people who don't even know us and don't know yeah. about us? And like,
and often, of course, you can't predict
no,
what will live
you can't.
On.
Like,
because it's like, you can't script your children's memories. And that's the thing that's always so hilarious. Like the big important thing that you did that you put so much time into planning.
Like,
not a one of
did
them
that. I don't
remembers.
No.
No, they don't remember. But they do remember.
I remember us, one of those for us was pulling over to peel oranges on like a gravel road with Granddad.
Yeah, I remember that too. Weird.
Yeah, and Granddad telling us to just throw them in the field and we thought that was crazy talk, but then he was like, it's biodegradable, it's fine, it won't yeah. hurt anything. And that's like when I learned that it was okay to throw orange peels in a field.
That's
like,
funny.
But yeah. like, nobody planned that out. That was no. not...
No, and so the, like, what will you be remembered for? Who knows? Let's just hope that it's
no,
some
but
of the good.
It's not that you can tell what you will be remembered for, but if your life is marked by productive, sacrificial,
giving.
Love, faithfulness, yeah. you will be remembered for that. Whether it is the thing you cared a lot about or something
right.
that just happened in passing. And,
yeah.
you know, and even like, I think of that, like, Lord, let us be more and more fruitful into the future. And not because I'm like trying to make something
build a legacy.
But it's not because I'm trying to make a specific thing that's like, this
yeah.
has to be treasured by all of my children and grandchildren.
No.
But that you want a life that would be treasured by them. Like you
right.
want something that would be like,
right.
no, that mattered.
And you can't be that kind of person by keeping track of what everybody else owes you.
No, and you can't be it by trying to imitate a fake character. Like, when we were talking about great women of the faith and women in Scripture, how do we know about them? Because they're still having, you know, because their faithfulness was either written down in Scripture or taken
right.
the distance to still be handed down to
us. None of them had the just follow your dreams and...
Surprisingly,
and
that was not a theme.
No, and they were just so well-dressed and they just had such
except
a,
except for that...
pleasant
deep,
life with
deep, dark, and devious. The Diary of Marjorie Kemp. Don't read
what?
That bad business from the medieval woman who wrote a diary. And I, like a fool, signed up to do a report on. It was like a pick another historical book to do a report on. You know, and I was like, what? A medieval woman's diary? That would be wonderful to read, but boy was she a hot mess, and it was all for the ill that we still know what she did. She's like, she like got super convicted suddenly after mothering 11 children that sex was evil, so she left her family to go on a sacred pilgrimage somewhere. Just abandoned them all. Got super...
She followed her dreams.
She was a hardcore troublemaker in the medieval period. Yeah, I was like, what? We have got to not keep a record of this. It was so bad. So bad. She got real mystic, kind of. Like, so it was all her, like, spiritual reflections on the road away from her family. They're like, Marjorie, you are the worst. The worst. It grieved my spirit because what I thought I was going in for was nothing like that. It was just so bad. Anyways, all that is to say, don't read that. So, do you have a tip?
Yeah, recommend. How about you? You go
Becca,
first.
Becca,
I have one.
I owe it to our listeners to prod you about Peace Like a River again.
Word.
They're on our Facebook page, all having their lives changed by reading this
word.
Marvelous work.
I know, and checking to see if I have.
But yeah, and the pressure's
point,
on.
No, at this point, I
do
might
have
just
a copy
get
of
obstinate.
It?
Yeah, I do.
So, why don't you promise us
I cannot,
to read the
I
first chapter?
That. No.
The first chapter, Becca. The first chapter by the next episode.
No, I cannot.
Becca, why? Weenie, weenie, weenie.
Well, first off, because
you don't
I just
want
feel
to.
Like I'm being bossed. But so,
I knew there would be something spiritual in there.
There may be some element of that. But the other one is that I'm, speaking of that, I'm doing this honors class and I have to read a whole pile of things for that. So I'm reading Rules for Radicals, and then I am reading Rules for Reformers, and then I am reading Planet Narnia. And
no,
so
it doesn't count. If it's not Peace Like River, it's not reading.
I can't.
Okay, fine.
All right. But then, all right, tip. Here's a tip.
Yeah.
You have one. Go first.
Share me yours. Mine is, since I brought my pet bread with me today,
yes.
It reminded me of the reason I'm making this bread again today. So it's my sourdough bread, which we just really like. The whole family likes it. So, but when I make it, if I make 4 loaves at one time, we don't need all 4.
Right.
Every time. As delicious as it is. And we can eat bread, but that
mm-hmm.
would be too much for us.
Right.
We could kind of spread it out over 2 days where you bake 2 one day and then bake the other 2
sure.
the next day. But even so, too much bread. So I've been freezing it. But the thing that is funny is that I didn't know how handy I would find big cubes of bread frozen. We cut it into cubes.
Okay.
Sometimes slices if I think
size
I'm going to do
what?
Something.
Croutons or
no,
like
it's bigger than a crouton. It's like a large crouton. Like,
can you fit it in your mouth at one time?
Yeah, but that's because it's not. It's a airy bread. It's like
okay.
So it compresses a
sure.
bit when you. But it is a big bite. It would be a very too big of a bite of cheese.
Okay. I'm not. This is getting
calculations on the size of this bread. Yes, but
ping
like
pong ball size.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
I think with squares.
Yeah,
on the corners.
Picture
there.
A square
okay.
ping pong ball. Now we've got it.
So I cut the bread into cubes and freeze it in cubes, and the thing that I didn't know is how very handy bread cubes were going to be.
Okay.
And so
tell me
I'll
why.
Tell you these applications. One, making homemade hummus for something. Like when we were
what?
Like
hummus?
Well, not with bread in it, but
oh.
so we're having like summer style dinner where it was
okay.
like we had like salami and like some other, you know, it was like a very fruit
okay.
veg whatever, but I was like, "Oh, I'll make some hummus." But then I was like I just grabbed a bunch of it and toasted it in the oven really fast. And it's like hot, toasty bread cubes is really, really, really good in
yeah.
homemade hummus. Like that was really good.
In homemade? You mean like dipped? Okay.
All I right. did not
right.
compress it all into
well,
the hummus.
I was
going to
be
no, no.
sort of surprised.
No,
okay.
but even for, and then for breakfast, pan frying a little, like couple handfuls of it in butter and then doing the eggs and stuff with
oh,
that.
Yeah.
super good. And then, and because I have so many children, these are the things that actually fill the crowd. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a lot of eggs to make my kids stop eating eggs.
Have you ever made that one recipe that I talked about ages ago?
No, the chicken with the bread chicken. Cubes?
That would be
no,
perfect.
But I meant to, and then I ran out of the bread cubes. So I keep, now I just make bread for the bread cubes in the freezer because yeah. it makes everything so handy. And it's even totally
or
delicious.
Even just to throw in a salad like croutons.
Yeah,
really
but
good.
When I roast veggies, like if I roast a bunch mm-hmm. of veggies at the end, I would throw some bread cubes in, and because yeah. it's like on broiler, like a high heat roast. Okay. They kind of toast, but it's just like yeah. hot, warm bread on the inside, but crunchy toasty on the outside.
Do you ever throw them? Because I've done it before with just like day old bread or whatever that I cut up and then saute them almost in a bit of like garlic and olive oil. And then
the bread or the veggie.
The bread. No, yeah. and they crust up and those are like delicious in a salad.
Yeah. So if I have slices are obviously easy to use and we use them sometimes for emergency dinners.
Right.
Like just toast it with, it's not really pizza, but where you toast it and then have meat or, you know, like you put some cheese, it's like open face sandwiches sure. or something. And that's yeah. really delicious. It's just been, it's way, way handy to have an enormous bag of these
frozen bread cubes
because it's delicious bread. It's well, not just like
yeah
it's not
no, it is delicious bread.
But it makes me still happy to find it, and because it has a lot of spring, the bread is chewy, it has a lot of mm-hmm. spring, it doesn't get like they're not like compressed pieces of
sure.
bread
yeah.
that make you feel in your heart that this came from a bad place in the freezer. It's like they're resilient
yeah.
bread.
Yeah. So okay, my tip is maybe it matches yours a little bit. So this is what
tips.
I've been doing this summer. I have a bunch of herbs in my garden.
Yes, it and, so matches.
Yeah, and my herbs, I've got a lot of oregano, and you know how oregano just gets hideous. If you let it like, more trucks. If you let it get all leggy and spindly, and then it like flops out sideways, and then you have like a bald patch in the middle with like your oregano laying
it's
down.
Scary,
it just
unseemly.
Looks, yeah, it looks really bad. It looks gorgeous in the spring because it's all mm-hmm. like lush and beautiful. Well,
I should get some of your herbs from you.
Yeah, I actually have a whole pile. Mm. But anyway, I determined this year that I am going to use the darned herbs, you know,
yeah.
rather than just, oh, I needed some time, so I'll go pick a few sprigs, but I wanted yeah. to like actually do something with it. So I went out and sheared down several patches of oregano, and now it's regrowing, so it'll actually be
right.
pretty again. But I did it before it got all ugly, and then I stripped the leaves, chopped it up, and I'm doing the thing where I'm putting it in ice cube trays, like you pack an ice cube tray
right.
full, and
I've
then
seen that.
Top
it
with olive
clever.
Oil, freeze it, and then you just have cubes of olive oil with fresh oregano in it, and
seems
it actually
clever.
And I said earlier that I have a hard time using my things in my freezer, but this is actually really great. And so it's really even if I'm just starting.
Your huckleberry jam was not really great.
Well, it's in the garage freezer.
Well,
maybe
bring
that's my problem.
Bring one in.
I know.
Send Judah.
But anyway, I it's really great to just pull out because it's a small amount of olive oil.
It's emergency
pasta. You can
pasta.
Use it in like salad dressings. I've used it to like saute the onions before I do a soup. You know, it's
yeah,
just been really great. And so I'm trying to do that with
you
more of
see,
my herbs.
You should
or
try
like
to
combinations
do some,
of herbs.
You should do some infused oils.
Actually, I probably will do some infused oils, but then also one of my girls is getting all involved in extracts at the moment. So she
Hero.
Is, yeah. So she's got a
she
little
orange.
Brew.
I made a big, I used those, you know, the jam bon, what is it like?
Bon maman. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that jam. Makes
yeah.
good jam.
It is good jam.
I buy that for Danishes when I want
uh-huh.
a beautiful,
yeah.
delicious jam, but those jars I use for extracts.
I love those jars.
So
actually,
I use it. I just use it with a little lid. So I did like orange extract. The thing is,
well, they were just we were hunting around trying to find a suitable container.
Those are good for that.
But she did. She's got currently cooking. She's got mint and a peppermint and a.
Oh, I should do some of this too.
Lemon and lavender.
Why do people do that with? Why don't they do it with? Why don't they do that with herbs?
You mean like oregano extract?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What goes wrong there?
I have no
Something
idea.
Something must, because
but
otherwise
think
you'd think
you
would
do
it.
The other
Maybe
thing
it's because a dry
me,
herb makes the same impact. There's
we were
no.
trying to figure out what to do with all of our chives, and I think I'm going to probably end up doing like a garlic chive butter and put that in the freezer, but
yeah. That seems like every time you had a potato, you'd be glad.
Yeah,
you had
you'd
that.
Be happy yeah. for that. But the thing is, she was doing a little research for me, and she was like, "Hey, guess what you can do?" And our chives are past, like the flowers are kind of crispy looking yeah. now, but with the chive heads, you can steep them in vinegar, and then use that in salad dressings. So that sounds kind of exciting.
Sounds
too.
Super fun.
So like next year,
I
maybe.
Have a, in my heart, I love places that are full of jars of various
I know.
Little things.
And we've got some drying.
So I'll
We're
tell you the bad news about
bunches.
my orange extract was deliciously good. Okay. Smelled so good.
Yeah.
But at the end of its time, I made it in time for. Anyways. I just used the last of it, but then all my peels of orange peel, and it looked like, it just looked hideous. It looked like, shaved calluses or something, because it like, they'd
you
lost all of their,
it.
They, no, you leave them in the, you leave, they weren't, nothing was wrong with them. They were totally preserved in the vodka. It's just that they lost all their color and
I
stuff
know,
over time.
I know, but strained that, and then you have to look at the hideous thing.
Well, I... just was done. I mean, it was done.
I actually kind of think they might be really good in a cocktail, too.
But like they would be. I like... made a summer cake that I, that well, it's a cake that I made up. This I make the cake, but I made up the variation of the cake, which okay. I put, were you there this last? No, you weren't.
No, but I
you
tasted
weren't.
It. You sent some leftovers.
Oh, did it was good,
yeah, it was
wasn't
really
it?
Good, yeah.
And it was, but I used lavender and
yeah.
then orange extract and then lemon and lime zest in it, and it was really good.
Lavender extract or lavender?
I used lavender oil in, okay. in it with, but it was
well,
really good.
This is the other thing I've done with my herbs, though, that was very funny. For the party in Pittsburgh, did I tell you this? I made this. It was a moment of desperation. I needed a non-alcoholic.
You told
beverage.
Me that, not that you made. Oh, you made it in
yeah,
Pittsburgh.
And I was in Pittsburgh, so I was just gonna do club soda and lemonade, and I grabbed. Oh,
my,
she's gonna turn it again.
Another turning.
The bread's happening. So I grabbed some handfuls of mint to throw in just to make it more interesting looking.
This is the show of sound effects today.
Yeah, it is. Sound effects everywhere. Anyhow, then I couldn't find club soda in that grocery store for whatever cause. And then I just was like, whatever, I'll just use ginger ale. And I found a big 2-liter of something that was called Southern Style Mint Ginger Ale. So I was like, well, that's perfect. So I used that lemonade concentrate and then I threw mint in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was stupidly good.
It
so
sounded really good.
I wanted to give it to my kids. And so when I got home, I Googled it up. And it appears that Pittsburgh is the only place.
I love that you would find a local to Pittsburgh only.
Yeah, it was like, it's the only place in the world you can get it is Pittsburgh. And people oh, who grew up in Pittsburgh and left, now they miss it. And they post questions on the internet about where to
That's
find it.
That's the only way you find it mentioned.
So what I
what
did,
brand
though,
was it?
Tom Tucker or something like that.
So it wasn't even like a...
No. So anyway, what I did is with mint from the garden, I did a simple syrup and did a pile of ginger in there and a pile of mint and just
really
simmered it.
I don't know why you haven't made this for me.
I know. And then strained it and then we
You've
used
been
that.
Slacking off. You
so
know,
we used the simple syrup with ginger and mint with club soda with lemonade concentrate. And that is actually a really fabulous combination. But look at what time it is.
Really good.
I think we've run out
we've
of...
We've tipped ourselves
we've
right
tipped,
on out. My bread
it out.
Made it through a full two
so
cycles.
So put herbs and olive oil and bread in your freezer and you'll never regret it. You
yeah.
could dip your cube into your oil. It'd
yeah.
be amazing.
Yeah. All right.
All
have
right.
a happy one.
Goodbye.
Bye.
New St. Andrews College thanks you for listening.